Welcome to the Win the 16 podcast, presented by Pygon One Consulting. This is your go-to podcast on optimizing your day. The Win the 16 podcast features discussions on leadership, coaching, personal and professional development, as well as interviews with special guests who are leaders in their fields. Your host is Dave Pygon, president of Pygon One Consulting, and author of Win the 16, Principles and Strategies to Optimize Your Day. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome to the Win the 16 podcast. To my loyal listeners, thank you. We love you. We appreciate you. And our new listeners, we love you too. So thanks for joining in. Today, I don't even know how to describe her. I'm going to do my best I can. We met a couple months ago. How she looks on TV and the way she comes across is exactly how she comes away in person too. I'll give her a formal introduction, but I will say hello. The Jasmine Miner from the Chicago ABC News World.
Hello.
Welcome to Win the 16 podcast, my new buddy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Dave. I'm so excited. I'm so excited we got connected and just so excited to be here.
Oh, I know. Me too. Yeah, I never know who I'm going to meet at Maury's luncheons. Maury, if everyone listening, Maury Elstein is the godfather of how to network, connect with people. He knows everybody. He's an institution here in the city of Chicago. And Jasmine and I are part of his kind of club there. And once a month on Tuesdays, he has these luncheons. And Jasmine had to attend this one. So did I. And we connected and started chit-chatting. And I'm like, you got to come on the podcast. I got to introduce you to my little world here. And she was kind enough to do that. So for our listeners out there, let me tell you who the Jasmine Miner is. Every week, my guests, I say this all the time because they're amazing backgrounds, but here's another one. Three-time Emmy Award-winning anchor. I love the word trailblazer at ABC7 Chicago. Former Division I tennis player. Graduated in her top one class, top 1% of her class from Northwestern. I'm not even going to tell you where I went. Pales in comparison. School of Journalism. Serves as the CEO of Rise Productions, a dynamic, impact-driven company delivering keynote speaking, speechwriting, high-level event services to media, corporate, and not-for-profit organizations. One of three sisters. This fact is really, really cool. I had no idea, and this is amazing. So kudos to you and your family. You are one of three ladies, girls, women, black, who played Division I tennis. And your dad was a big role model on part of that, and I know he's someone you constantly think about, and he co-founded the USTA Midwest Ken Miner Legacy Fund in 2022, which awards the largest tennis scholarship to young female athletes in the Midwest. Amazing.
Yeah.
Kudos to your father. Kudos to you for, and we're going to get into his and the legacy and the foundation and that today for sure with it. But three, how do you get, I got to ask right out of the gate, how do you get three girls in Chicagoland area Division I athletes? Obviously some talent there, but walk us through that. I'd love for you to tell us that story right out of the gate because I find it fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It was actually just recently we learned that we are the first and only family in history to have three black women play Division I tennis. And so, you know, I think that's really a testament to my dad, but also, you know, my mom, both of my parents. Neither of my parents were athletes. I mean, they both played like a little bit of tennis for fun in high school. But they did not do anything to our level by far. Both my dad was a computer engineer. My mom was a chemical engineer. But they were just very big on, you know, whatever you pick, ballet, piano, you know, if you want to be part of the science club, debate team, tennis, whatever it is, you just give it 110%. That was kind of the one rule in the house, that if you're going to do it, you do it all the way. And so my parents were just very big on giving us every kind of opportunity. We kind of fell into tennis a little bit randomly, honestly. My little sister and my older sister and I used to stay with our grandparents in Indianapolis over the summers because my parents got married very young. And so they were working and the grandparents were helping out over the summer. And there is this high school in Indianapolis on the outskirts where it's got like an insane amount of tennis courts for a high school. I mean, you're talking like 50 tennis courts. It's huge. And so they had little tennis camps. And so that's what we did. That's how we spent our time in the summers. And suddenly my older sister kind of fell in love with the sport. And then, you know, I was behind her and my little sister Brie got dragged around to all the tennis tournaments growing up. So then she kind of picked it up and it just kind of became a family affair, if you will, with my parents learning as they go. Tennis is not the typical sport like you would find with basketball or football where majority of the sport goes through the school system. Tennis has like its entirely own entity, especially if you're talking about playing on a Division One or professional level. And so it really, the burden really falls on each individual family to sort of figure it out. So my dad was just very big on not only allowing us the opportunity, but he was very big on trying to give others the opportunity as much as he could. So we kind of just all fell in love with it, honestly. And my parents said, as long as each of them are happy doing it, that was just the most important thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's awesome. I know my mom raised three boys. And by the way, I got to give a shout out to your mom. I don't want her mad at me. So, mom, shout out
Yeah,
to you
mom's in
too.
there.
I know you crushed it too, and I know you are a big part of this as well. So, mom, we love you too. So, I don't want her. I don't want to get on. I don't want to get on her bad side, Jasmine.
Don't
I
do
got to
that.
stay.
Not with Mama Minor.
No. I got to stay on the good side. So, my mom raised three boys on her own, and she told us, you got to take care of your education, but you got to pick something and stay busy so you stay out of trouble on the south side of Chicago where we grew up. And it was genius. It was genius. I mean, keeping us busy and moving and doing things. And we were in basketball and we were more of the traditional basketball, football, baseball, but still, it's that keeping busy. I want to share something with you. Someone said this to me, God, months ago, and you epitomize this, and you have pretty much your whole life, is if you need something done, like really you need something done, home, work, person, it doesn't matter. Give it to the busiest person you know. They'll find a way.
They'll get
And
it
that's you.
done somehow.
Right. And that's you, right? Because I look at your background in Division One, top education at Northwestern, and you were in the top 1%, right? All of that takes time, right? That just busy. Now you're running around either at the anchor desk or you're reporting in the field at Channel 7 here in Chicago constantly, it never ending, right? You fit that bill. I'm taking you off the path what we're going to talk about, but I just wanted to know. Because a lot of my listeners are very successful and they're super busy people trying to fit it, all these things in. I know you're big into Pilates too. How do you do it? Like, what do you have any secret sauce that you it keeps you how you keep doing all the things that you do and stay on top of things and then your foundation as well. So, any pearls you could share, my friend?
You know, I don't really think, if I'm being honest, I don't really think there's any secret sauce. I don't think anyone really finds that. I think a lot of people ask about, you know, work-life balance. I don't know if there's really the perfect balance. I think it's, for me, it's a mixture of, you know, working really, really hard and understanding the why behind what I'm doing. I think that helps a lot, right? Because it's not just about, I think, you know, the awards or the Emmys or, you know, being on TV or the status or the money or whatever else it is, but it's really about the impact for me. It's about everything that I'm doing from ABC to my company to the foundation to honestly just showing up in different places at schools, at galas, at different nonprofits, right? That is what keeps me going. Because if you really just, if you're so focused on, I think, I would say materialistic things, if you will, right? I think it's very easy to get burnt out. I think it's very easy to kind of lose the focus of, why is this so important? And so and when I think about the impact that I can have on communities and people around me, it makes me work that much harder and look at, okay, what are the visuals I'm using in my story? What are the words that I'm using in my story? How does this translate to an audience, and why does that matter? And I think people kind of forget that a little bit because we're just so in workhorse mode where we just go, 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 go. And you forget, like, you wake up one day and you're like, why am I doing all this? Like, what was my purpose in this? So I think it's part that. The other part is, I think, is grace. Like, I have to be able to give myself grace that I am just not going to be able to get to everything and give every single thing 110% all of the time. It's just impossible. I'm one human being. And part of that grace is being able to say, like, raise my hand and be like, look, I need help with this. I need help managing this. I need to see if there are other people who can sort of join forces with me and, come in, and I can delegate things and find ways to make it a little bit easier on myself. Because, I mean, some days you are going to have 100%, and some days, honestly, you're going to have 50. Like, that's just the reality. That's just life. And so I think when you look at what is my impact and the why, and having a level of grace for yourself, I think one of the best things that athletes learn to do over time, especially I think serious athletes and people who have done it for, decades. A lot of people focus on leadership skills, and they talk about our time management and discipline and work ethic. And I think all that is great and encompasses a true athlete. But I think at the core, what we learn how to do is we learn how to fail. We learn how to fail really, really, really well. Week in and week out, since I was 10 years old, I had to learn how to give everything, right? Blood, sweat, and tears. I'm waking up at 4 a.m. I'm training. I'm going to school. I'm going to practice for hours after. I'm missing school and having to catch up. I mean, I was in a different state, a different country every 2 weeks all year round since I was 10 years old. And so there was a level of dedication there, but that didn't mean I was successful every single tournament, right? That didn't mean I was successful every single time. I had to fail and fail and then come back to the drawing board and learn how to give 110% again and then go back again, right? And I think athletes are so good at that. We are so good at understanding the purpose of failing and kind of being forged in fire, if that makes sense, and being able to get back up again. And I think for most people, they don't really learn those lessons, I think, until you get to, college, your first job where, you had this plan and you worked hard for it. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. Like, it just didn't happen. And so I think because I've had just that experience, it's almost like instead of being fearful of failing or being fearful of not meeting even my own standards and my own expectations or the expectations people have for me, I'm able to say, all right, well, this is what we're going to do. This is what happened. This is where it went wrong. We're going back to the drawing board. We're going to do it again. We're going to try it again, right? Because I understand that the impact that I can have on other people around me is just that important. And really, I think that's what keeps me going.
And you enjoy it.
I do. I do. I really, really do. It's very, very hard work. I don't, the news is not for the weak. I mean, it really is not. It's a tough business. It's a tough industry. It really, really is. But I think it is just such valuable work. What we write and what we put out there can change, the course of history. It can change communities. It can change the way people are perceived. And it's an incredibly privileged position to be in. And I think it should be handled with care. And I think every journalist would really tell you that no one really gets into journalism for, I think, fame and fortune. I don't think this is the job for that. But we do get into it to give communities who don't have a voice and a platform. And I think that is really, really, really important.
Do you all reporters and journalists Do you uncover that when you get that first job in Des Moines, Iowa, or somewhere in your first job out of school when it really hits you about what it is really to do? Because, right, because before you get into it, I mean, the rest of us, you just see they're dressed well, they look great, they're articulate, they speak well, et cetera. We don't see all the dirty, real work
All
that
the
goes
behind the
behind.
scenes.
Yeah, and I
Yeah,
get it.
I mean, yeah.
Go ahead.
I think it's funny because there are moments where I am rushing and I'm on deadline. I'm curling my hair in the car. I'm putting my makeup on while I'm on the phone with a producer, while I've got my computer out and I'm writing, and then I'm jumping out of the car and I'm just live shot, just like that. So it does get very, very, very hectic behind the scenes.
I bet.
I would say, but something that is Medill, Northwestern is famous for, Medill School of Journalism, is they have what's called a Medill F. And the Medill F is essentially where, let's say you've been asked to write a paper or report on something. If there is anything that is factually wrong with it, so I don't know, you're a sports reporter and you're reporting on, I don't know, like Patrick Mahomes or something like that, and you report he had 13 touchdowns in the season when really he had 12 or something like that. It could be something minuscule. You spell his name wrong, whatever it is, right? It's an automatic F. They do give you a chance to come back and do it again, but you get an automatic F. And so I think even just being in that environment where your attention to detail needs to be high,
Wow.
right? That everything that you're writing, the names that you're spelling, the data that you're bringing in, the context you're putting it in, it needs to be right. It needs to be factual. It needs to be fair. And so they brought a very high standard of that, I think, in school. And so and for me, that really set the tone for like the rest
Wow.
of my journalism career.
Wow. I love it, but wow. That is, whoo, you said so many things that I want to hyperlink and ask questions, but I'll never get to these other ones I wanted to ask too. But I do have to get into two things you said because I think myself and all our my listeners probably could use some guidance in this one. You said you ask for help, you give yourself grace. Those are two really hard things for the average successful, especially type A driver out there. Any advice or tips or intentionality that we can use to help with giving ourselves grace as well as raising our hands and saying, I need help?
I think I think it's kind of one of those things where either you're going to raise your hand and do it, or your circumstances and life is going to force you there. Like at some point, there has to be an acceptance that I'm just human, right? That I slip up, that I make mistakes, that I fall short. And either I can accept that right away, or I can keep going and keep trying and keep forcing and keep overworking and not sleeping and, turning on my phone. The first thing I open is my email, or, whatever else it is, and just never giving myself a break where, physically, emotionally, spiritually, whatever it is, eventually it's going to catch up with me. Eventually, it's kind of like, you get like a really bad cold or the flu or whatever after you've spent like months working, 16-hour days or whatever else it is, right? Like it's your body telling you need a break. And trust me, that is one of the hardest things for me to say because I am naturally a workaholic. Like I am the person where I am emailing, I am calling. I mean, I am on it all day from morning to night. I am the worst person at rest. But it is because of that where I've had to learn, Jazz, if you do not give yourself an hour from not looking at the news or not paying, or just an hour mental break, take a walk, whatever it is, it's gonna catch up. And there have been moments in my life where it has. where I did get burnt out, where it was really, really heavy, and I just had to be like, okay, I have to take care of myself now. And so I think that's really, really, really important. I think it gets overlooked. I think in terms of what helps is being disciplined in the time management, right? So whether it's, hey, I have date night with my wife or my husband every Tuesday. That's what we're doing. And no matter what happens, no matter what meetings come up, no, you know, like this is what we're doing. This is the time, or it's this is the hour of my day, whatever it is. If you have to wake up early, right? If the normal wake up time is 5 and you got to get up at 4 to make yourself a cup of coffee or a tea or whatever, and just like just sit and meditate or read a book or listen to music just before you even get your day started, because you know it's impossible to get that hour in the rest of the day. If that's what you have to do, then do it. And so I think there is a level of discipline. I think for me, any time when I can just totally separate work, and I've asked even friends when I'm out, I try to make accountability partners, right? So I say, hey, can you walk through this with me, right? When we go out to dinner, if you catch me starting to talk about work or whatever, you just say, hey, Jazz, we're not doing that tonight. Right? Like, we're gonna have fun. Let's talk about something else, right? Any, literally anything else. Throw out a topic, your favorite movie, your favorite show, what are you watching, your book, whatever, whatever it is. And so I think, you know, but it's a level of, right, it's discipline. And then it's saying, who are my accountability partners in my life? And how can they sort of walk through this with me? And you have people that are checking in, you know, if you're married, it's like, hey, how was date night, right? You know, hey, did you do this? Did you take that break? Did you go stay in that cabin for a weekend? You know, how's it going? Like, you have people that are holding you accountable for what you're saying. 'Cause it is really, really hard to like make a list and then totally be accountable and perfect to it by yourself. I think community is so, so important. And so, and I think kind of finding your tribe to be able to do that is very valuable.
It is amazing that we just met a couple months ago, because
Yeah.
the words you use, I live by them. And it's in the book, Win the 16. Accountability partners is everything. I mean, a tribe, I would use that for the Ironman. I'm on a text chain with my brother, who's a doc, and his best friend, Al, who's become a great friend. He's a doc at Harvard. And they're my accountabilities. I can guarantee, I have not looked, Jazz, but I can guarantee I've got a text from one or both of them already on what they did this morning in terms of their health plan, workout,
All
sleep,
that, yeah.
something. Because they're brilliant, they're smart, they're good fun, but they're accountability people for me. And I'm learning
Yeah.
from them. And it's amazing what you said. Time management, let's go back to that for a second. Because you live a world of, I don't know, I can't think of a better word right now than this. It's chaos at times. Like, you're running all
Yeah.
over the place trying
Yeah.
to get all these things done. I mean, something happens in the city, you're in the van or the car and you're running out there to report on it. Or if something
Yeah.
happens when you're anchoring at the desk, how do you, any tips for the people out there that are living busy, chaotic lives like you in terms of the world of time management?
Gosh, it's so funny because I feel like this is like this constant practice that will probably be kind of the rest of my life for me, where it's just, you know, you just never get it right, but you just keep trying, trying, trying again. I think it's prioritizing. I really think that is what I am learning even in this season right now, is prioritizing what is the most important and where do I need to get to first. And then where are the things where I'm like, okay, if I really don't get to that, yeah, you know, it would be really, really, really nice to do it, but I'm just, you know, I have to just accept that I can't do it all. My dad used to say, you know, if you make like a checklist, start with the hardest task first, like the thing you don't want to do the most. Or the thing like you're dreadful of, you're like, oh my God, this is gonna be the hardest one. Like, get that off your list, because it just takes such a burden off your shoulders. The other thing that I think helps me is with time management is making a routine. And it could be really little things. Like, it doesn't need to be major, but I think you'll notice like the emotional, physical, spiritual will just, and the mental will just get so much better, right? If it's like, hey, I'm going to make my bed every morning. It's something really simple, right? It probably will take you 2, 3 minutes, you know, at most, but
Right.
there's something about coming home to like a clean room, right? And so it's something as, all right, I'm not going to leave dirty dishes in the sink. I'm going to make sure I take a 15-minute walk, even if it's on the treadmill or if it's outside. I think it's just kind of creating that routine so that even when there is chaos, right, you sort of kind of have this balance even through the chaos, right? Because you're keeping the routine regardless of circumstance and condition. And I think that is what really helps me just stay, you know, stay okay throughout the day. And then things just don't feel as heavy anymore.
You, one of the things that I got out of what you just said is it is a constant battle and it's something you have to constantly focus on, correct? Like there's no, it's not as if it gets easier. It's just that it's got to be intentional and continued focus through for all of us.
I don't think, you know, I don't think life gets easier, but I
No.
think we gain more wisdom, right? And so we learn. So life doesn't get easier, but the people that we can become wiser and stronger and more graceful and more patient and kinder. And over time, right, you sort of just, you kind of learn, you know, my dad used to say, like, you know, Jazz, if no one died today, it's a good day. You know,
Yeah.
like what could possibly
Right.
be so horrible, so worth stressing your entire like. And it doesn't mean things aren't important. Like, trust me, I'm not sitting here and being like, be lazy or don't work hard. Like, that is
No,
like, do
no,
not
no.
take that at all. Like, at all. I'm just saying, put it in perspective.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah,
it. And prioritize.
you're not being cavalier on it. I will tell you, when I just turned 56 a couple weeks ago. When I hit
Happy birthday.
50, oh, thank you so much. And when I hit 50, it just changed for me right around then in terms of this. I just don't get that negative mindset very often. And if I do, I get out of it very quickly and get to a neutral mindset. And it's just something I remember learning this years ago in one of the emotional intelligence classes. I can't remember if they called it the power of three or the rule of three when John taught us this. And it is simply this. In the airport is the best example. Whatever happens in that moment that's, you know, doesn't seem wonderful, is it going to be important 3 minutes, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months from now? That's the power of the rule of three. And you see people in the airports, they would literally run over my mother. I find the airport people definitely can lose their grace, is the word you used earlier. And they're not always the kindest human beings going through Chicago's O'Hare Airport, especially on a Friday night, running through that place. But it's amazing that this just happened. I was flying to Idaho for work, and one of the flights was delayed. And you would have thought this poor lady, you should have heard her on the phone. She's like, "You're not going to believe this. I'm here at the airport." And I was thinking, you're at Chicago O'Hare, one of the busiest airports in the world. You're shocked that we're delayed? Like over the top.
It's a
Like
good
I
point.
almost was like, your blood pressure right now just shot up through the roof. Like this, your cardiologist is not really happy right now if he was next to you. But the point of it is, it's that rule of like nobody's going to be talking about their delay at the airport 3 days from now. Perspective.
No, it's a good point. You're right.
You
Right. They
said it.
moved on. Right.
You just move on. I want to say this thing before I talk about Rise Productions, where you're the CEO of your company there. And that is, so you win, you know, three Emmy Awards, which kudos to you. It's amazing.
Thank
Congratulations.
you.
Oh,
Thank
no, it's
you.
awesome. Awesome. Good luck on the fourth. Good luck.
Thank you.
With that said, how do you stay driven, hungry, continuing to push forward for lack of a better greatness, right? To stay on top of your game and what do you do?
I mean, I think I'm a naturally competitive person. I think that's the athlete in me for sure. I personally just love creating. Like I really just get a kick out of how can I look at things differently? How can I tell stories differently? How can I do things differently? I think, even when we're talking about the Kevin Minor Legacy Fund, which is a tennis scholarship that the largest tennis scholarship in the Midwest that my family gives out, to a female tennis player. I'm even, think about, how can we think about that differently and expand and touch and reach? I really don't love putting limitations on things, at all. I love to think, is there just a new height, a new level that we can bring it to? And personally, I think that's just who I am. Like, it's at my core. It's funny because, for, all the Emmys and all the nominations and all the awards, I usually it's this big massive project that I'm working on, and man, I will pull all-nighters like nobody's business. I mean, I am like going over footage, and I mean it really is a massive thing, and it usually wears me out every time. And then I'll call a friend of mine and I'll be like, okay, that's it. That is it, right? That I've got my Emmys, like I'm good. We did the big project. I love it. That's it. I'm not doing it for a while, a couple years, whatever. And then it will be maybe a couple months later, and I will call them and I'll be like, Ashley, I have an idea. And she's like, oh, here she goes again. Like, it's just who I am. I think I just love to be creative. Like, it's part of my DNA. I think if you talk to any kind of, whether it's like musicians, actors, writers, kind of are very artistic people, even, tech and AI people. It's just so it's very natural for us to want to create more and to create better and to think more outside the box of what's possible, and to think past limitations. And that's just such a natural thing for me to do that honestly, that's what keeps me going. And it's funny because I've tried to just stop and be like, all right, we've done enough. And then suddenly my friend gets a call at like 4 a.m. saying, I woke up and I think I've got a new idea that I just got to do it. This will be the last one, I promise. This is it. This is the last series. This is the last documentary. This is the last we're in. And then I just, and then
Oh,
here we are. So.
I funny you should say this. First of all, you do really well with the author book writing community and the Iron Man community because they're the exact same way. They're like, oh, I'm good. And then they get an idea. I'm like, all right, I'm gonna write another book, or I want to do the Iron Man in Spain. It's funny, I'm giggling when you were saying that about, oh, I got another idea. If you met my wife, she's the nicest. She's a school teacher. She's kind. She totally would want to hear all about you and everything about you and just listen to you. But you would have thought I was talking to a cutthroat, crazy person. But when I decided I want to do another Iron Man next year in 2026, I was nervous when I had it was going to tell her. So here's what I did. Have you ever been to Girl and the Goat?
Yes,
Okay,
I have.
it's a great restaurant, correct? Okay, so it's one of her favorites in Chicago, in the West Loop, great area here in Chicago. So I get reservations. I'm taking her out there for dinner. I'm totally setting up the entire stage so this I can present to this woman like I'm gonna do it again. That I'm gonna go back to back and try to do my second Iron Man in 2026 and repeat from 2025. So it goes back to you and your point. But I was so nervous and like, all right, how am I gonna present this to her? Because I told her I'm only gonna do one. That's it. I'm retiring. I'm doing it once in 2025, and then I'm done. And then I had to go back to her, and I took her out for a nice dinner, and I said, all right, I got to tell you something. So that was my new idea. And she took it well. She's like, all right, I'll support you. Because obviously your support system and tribe, they do have to suffer a little bit during a world of Iron Man. And she was great about it. So I had that idea. All right, friend. Tell me about Rise Productions. I know you're the CEO of your organization there. It media, the leadership, the impact. What gap do you see that inspired you to create that? You've got 100 things going on. And what is that? I guess, how'd you come up with Rise? What does it mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it just kind of speaks to every, part of my life, right? Where, when I talk about being forged in fire and learning how to fail and get back up again, I mean, one of the best examples of that obviously was just being an athlete, but also, even getting into journalism, my background is not actually journalism. My undergrad is in business finance and with a touch of marketing and advertising in there. And so, I fell into journalism really, really, really late. Very late, much later than other kids. I never thought about being a journalist ever, never crossed my mind. And, I was kind of at the point of life where, I hurt both my wrists in tennis and I was like, what do I do with my life and what's going on? And I just kind of went for it, and that's really where I've been able to just kind of rise again. And that's really where the name came from. And so, part of it is helping out with the Kevin Miner Legacy Fund, which is named on behalf of my late father who passed away in 2022. And, when I think about what we talked about, but being creative, if you will, and kind of thinking a little bit differently, we had our first kickoff fundraiser in the fall for the Legacy Fund. And I just went, is there a way we can kind of branch this out? Is there a way we can do a little bit different? I've been to a lot of galas. I've helped a lot of nonprofits in my journalism work. What else can we really touch here? And so for me, that was women in business. If you kind of look at the stats, 80% of female executives at Fortune 500 companies played sports and were athletes earlier in life. So there is a direct tie between what you see with women's sports and what you see economically with women in business. And so that's where I came up with the Rise Society, which is essentially just an event series where we raise funds for the Kevin Miner Legacy Fund. We do it through by bringing top women in Chicago and top leaders and top women in business. So think like 75% C-suite executives and 25% not startups, but small businesses that, have really been building over a period of time, and being able to put them in the same room. And for me, the threshold of that room, of getting in the room, was, have I seen that you have been mission driven throughout your career? Have I seen that making an impact about caring, whether it's within the company or outside the company, or the way your products and services affect communities, that has been a priority for you, right? And we had our first great event. We had about 75, 80 women in the room. Maury's wife, Cindy, was there. She was such a great supporter. We had a great fireside chat with Nadia Rawlinson, a good friend of mine, owner of the Chicago Sky, the president of the Blackhawks, Jamie Faulkner, and one really great friend of mine from JP Morgan, the co-head of the private bank here, Maggie O'Brien. And we just had an amazing night where we were able to raise funds for the tennis scholarship while really giving women a space to just breathe, right? A space where this isn't about who you are and what do you have to offer. It's more of like, no, tell me about that dream that drives you. Tell me how I can help. Tell me how I can encourage. Tell me how I can partner with you here. And so that's what we're actually gearing up to do in the spring, aiming for May, where we want to put an even bigger fundraiser on for the tennis scholarship. This particular fundraiser, we will allow male allies in the room, which will be amazing. But
yes,
but
I
you
can
know,
come.
It will be the yes, you can come, Dave. You can come, and
Thank
I
you.
Think it will
Thank
be
you.
It will be I think it will be the same thinking, because what I did notice about when I was able to, and as a journalist, look, I vet that invite list. I really do. I mean, I was thorough, because I wanted to make sure that regardless of position, that you had the right type of people in the room with the right type of mentality, right? And I think when I was able to put mission-driven women in one room, you saw this the intimidation factor went down, right? You saw this, I could come alone and I could still feel welcome, right? You saw this, I can share my idea here and I can find help. I can find investment. I can find guidance, mentorship here, right? Because you have the right type of character in the room. And I noticed that just creating that space, it elevated the level of creativity, of innovation, and collaboration. It just so happens that I also have a really great cause for people to support as a cherry on top. So it was really just an amazing thing. And so that's kind of what we're gearing up for May. And I'm just really, really excited. I think I've got really big dreams for the fund and for what we could build here in Chicago. And I'm just really excited for everyone to be a part of it.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, between you, Maggie, Cindy, there's some power women. I'm not messing with any of you, by the way.
Yeah.
So I get it. Like, I can see, yeah, all of you.
No, there, that was, I have to say,
Yes, ma'am.
getting not, yes, getting Nadia and Maggie and
Oh,
Jamie on
another
one
one.
panel for one night. I mean, I can't tell you how many emails I went back and forth with all of their assistants trying to schedule them, but I think I also think, that night, I have emceed a lot of panels, a lot of panels, a lot of galas, a lot of fireside chats. And typically what will happen is a panelist will typically, they'll come, they'll do the panel, and they'll usually leave pretty quickly. All three of them stayed the entire time. They
Yeah, very
talked
cool.
to almost everyone in the room. And I think that's what it really
Very cool.
says, right? It says the people and the character that was in the room made it a great experience. And so that is what I'm really about. I told all the women that night, I said, I feel like this is a partnership, right? When you come and you support the Kevin Minor Legacy Fund and Tennis Scholarship, in return, I'm giving you an amazing room to be in. And that's kind of my promise there, that I see this as a partnership versus just an ask. And I think that just created something really beautiful. And so I'm really excited to continue.
Your dad would be very proud.
Thank you. That
No,
means a
he
lot
would
to me.
know.
Thank you so much.
No. It's, yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, I mean, just it, the Kevin Minor Legacy Fund, the whole thing, amazing, amazing. What are you hoping the recipients of this scholarship that they take with them? Because it's amazing scholarship of what they get.
Yeah.
What are your hopes, dreams, thoughts, vision? What do you hope the
Yeah.
recipients get from this? I know it's a big question, but
Opportunity.
there's got to be something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's a couple things. One is possibility. Two is opportunity, and I would say three is exposure. When we are young and we are, developing, it's very, 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 very hard to understand what is possible if you cannot see and touch it, right? So there, for example, when we were growing up, my parents really put in the effort to take us to college matches, even if it was local, right? Or take us to the US Open or take us to the Cincinnati Open. There is something about being able to see and touch where something no longer is just a dream. It's like, oh, this could be my reality. This could be possible. And I think with a lot of kids, they're watching things on TV or they're watching things on online, but it's different when you see it in person. And when you go, okay, this is what it takes to get here. This is what this means, right? And I would say that is true for whether you're talking about sports or literally anything else, right? A kid shadowing someone like you, Dave, right? At work and being able to see what is possible here and what is attainable and how you got there. So I think that's so, so important. And so for each of our girls, one of our first recipients, Mariona Shannon, she really, really put the scholarship to work, and that gave her the more opportunity for training. It gave her more opportunity for being at different tournaments, being exposed to different things. And honestly, Dunlop, the racket company, actually gave her a sponsorship recently, and
Wow.
so she was able to give even more opportunity, right? And so you just think about you think about what it means to expose kids to this. Our most recent scholarship recipient, she's got dreams of playing at Duke University, and I think she absolutely can. And so, and where that leads them, right? Whether it's I'm going to go play pro, or whether it's I'm going to go and be a top Division I athlete at an amazing academic institution, and how that even sets up, like I was telling you, women's sports and women in business, right? In that tie, how that sets them up for literally the rest of their lives and the kind of opportunity that they're going to get even post athletics. And so I think that's my dream for, all of them. And honestly, just on a bigger level, my dream is you've got an entire family that's got 30 years of experience of being in sports and what it takes and what it's like and the finances and, getting recruited and all that kind of thing, that I think can apply to any sport. And so, my dream is to even take it beyond tennis and, one day, build just this amazing global empowerment women's sports fund. I think that we just have the background to be able, the knowledge and the education to be able to do so. And really that's my dream on a much, much bigger level. So hopefully one day we'll get there.
Knowing you, I think that dream will become a reality at some point. I love what you
Yeah.
said too, for even all of us out there that aren't students or aren't looking for scholarship in the business world, whatever we do, visualizing the end goal is so critical. Like seeing it and picturing yourself. So when you're doing the day-to-day hard stuff, getting up at 4 a.m. or running around, whatever you're doing that is so busy and so difficult and challenging, always visualizing where this is going. I find so motivating, right, Jazz? Like, it's so helpful during whether you're an ABC reporter, journalist like you, or anybody. It can be chaotic at times, but remembering that end goal can help, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And remembering that impact, right? So, for me, obviously I'm a competitor, right? So like I want to reach that end goal. I want to see it on a different level. But, I've even had to remind myself, if it's if these they won't be, but if these were the last recipients that we ever had, right? If this was it, man, we were able to make an impact in someone's life. And that really is so valuable, and it keeps me grounded, as we continue to build. But I've had to remind myself that even if it's just one person, and if it's the next Serena or the next Coco Gauff or whatever it is, and we were able to be a little footnote in that chapter of helping them get there, then I'm like, yeah, I'm all for it.
Amen. Let's close this. I think it'd be perfect timing here. How can people support you, the Kevin Miner Legacy Fund? Can you share with, I don't know, the website or something if anyone is interested in this and it jumped out at them? I'd love to share that with everyone. So why don't you share it with you if you can, Jess?
So our website is just theminorlegacy.com, minor M-I-N-O-R legacy.com. And obviously donations are always, always, always welcome. But right now, honestly, we are looking for amazing partners for our upcoming gala and fundraiser in the spring. We're looking for sponsors. We're looking for people that are really aligned. If you love women's sports, if you love tennis, if you love women in business and you just want to support us, or you just want to support a great cause, definitely reach out. I think people can reach us through the website, which is just really, really easy, and contact us. And that goes out to, our entire team. And so, we're just really, really excited. I think we've got something, amazing here. And so, but if someone just wants to make a great donation, I think that's really great too. On the flip end, I will say if you've got a kiddo and heck, they love tennis and you think the scholarship is for them, our scholarship will open up, I believe, in late January. So definitely follow the website for that as well.
Oh, it's great. And do you have a date yet for for the event in May, or are we still looking at that?
We are looking, it's going to be mid-May. So right mid-May. Now, okay. So it's going to be after Mother's Day. We're being just a little bit flexible because just for our fireside chat person that we're bringing in to make sure schedules align, which is always like the chicken and the egg, right?
This is
what I went through with the first event. It's like, are they available? Are they not? Okay. Do we need to kind of change the date? But yeah, mid-May is what we're aiming for after Mother's Day. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just amazed too when we were talking a couple months ago about the people you had at the last one. I mean, some really, I don't know, just influential, smart, kind, famous. You touched on so many buckets when you were naming some of the people that attended last time. Just incredible. So, Jasmine Meyer, amazing today, interesting, articulate. So likable. I can't say enough. You did an amazing, amazing job today to share your story, a bit about your background. And I wrote so many things down. We talked about the why, the purpose, grace, needing help, accountability partners, our tribe. By the way, your story about the attention to detail at Northwestern School of Journalism about missing one fact. And if you said 12 interceptions, Patrick Mahomes, and he actually had 13 or whatever the TDs, and that automatic F. That's a high standard, friend.
Yeah. It teaches you pretty quickly, doesn't it? It gets the point across pretty quickly.
Yes. Attention to detail. That was amazing. So thank you very much for joining the Win the 16 podcast today.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Appreciate you having me.
Nope. You were awesome. To the listeners, thank you so much. Love having you. We appreciate you. Jasmine and I are just trying to win our own 16 every day. And sometimes that feels like win the 20 because things get crazy and chaotic. So hang in there. Small wins. Keep going. Tying things to our priorities can make it a little bit helpful. And these are Jasmine's words, not mine. Giving yourself grace and asking for help. We all should. No matter how big and powerful you are who are listening, don't forget to give yourself grace too in this journey. So happy holidays, everybody. Happy New Year. And win the 16, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Win the 16 podcast presented by Paigon One. Please follow us on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Episodes will be released every other Wednesday at 7 a.m. Central Time. Thank you and go win the 16.